good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for August 31st, 2014. Koyo Kubose here. So very, very glad you joined us. Well, some local updates. My wife Adrian been going up to the Bay Area, about a 3-hour drive north to Berkeley, California. And she's staying at her late mom's house to clean it out so that they could sell it. And although it has been cleaned out sort of at various times in the last few years, you know, there's still things in the garage and the attic and storage units. And so she and her sister Amy are there and going through things, things to give away, things to throw away, some things to keep perhaps. And it's quite a big undertaking. They decided to have an estate sale. You know, this is where you have a company that specializes in that. They come in and they'll price everything and run the estate sale. Still, though, you have to decide on what items you're going to, for yourself, for the family, that has personal meaning or, you know, something. And so still, it's a big job. And when we think about it, this kind of activity is really ultimate example of two of the major teachings in Buddhism and Eastern philosophy, that of impermanence and interdependency. Impermanence because you see all these old memories being aroused and, oh, this happened when, oh, I remember when we got this, I was just a kid, and, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, time goes by. And, of course, interdependency, oh, we did this, we did that. And when you're thinking about past memories of different experiences of family members, different vacations, or when they did this, or, oh, this happened, and all the interactions, this is strictly on interdependency, on interpersonal relationships. Of course, there's impermanence and interdependency in other contexts, too. But this is, I think, a really quite emotional, impactful, I guess is the right word, illustration of those teachings of impermanence and interdependency when you're sorting out your parents' lives. It's your family life. And as many people who have done this know, and if they're Buddhists, they think about non-attachment. This is a good exercise in non-attachment. So, oh, I shouldn't, oh, I really want this, I could never throw this away. This is, you know, precious. Oh, I shouldn't be attached to so many material things. You know, I think that's a misapplication of the intention of the teaching of non-attachment. Non-attachment does not mean detachment. It doesn't mean not having emotions and feelings for material things and other people. You know, when things are important to us, that's it. The major application of non-attachment teaching is when that attachment victimizes you. That's one way that I worked with it when I was struggling with the teaching of non-attachment. Is your attachment really victimizing yourself, you know, in your life? I think sometimes the kind of attachment where you're one with something, it's just so precious and close to you, you know, that there's, it's in fact a full measure of living. That kind of thing is, it goes beyond attachment, and that's me. Huh? We miss our loved ones. How could we say, oh, I shouldn't be attached to the fact that my parents passed away, you know, get on with living and so forth? No, they're part of us, you see. But indeed, when Adrian has gone there for a week and then comes back home and then goes for a week again and cleared out a couple of the rear seats in the Odyssey van and brings back a lot of stuff. She found a lot of things that we could use for our sanctuary that we're building, nice cushions and other things. And she brings back some of her dad's tools. He was a landscape gardener and pretty, of course, you know, handy around the house and a lot of tools. So you can imagine if we pause to think about the strict causes and conditions of the process of how things are used. Gee, a certain object has its past history, its past life. Sometimes we know what it is, and sometimes we have forgotten. Where did this cushion come from? You know, I don't know. Or, yeah, we bought it at this rummage sale, or this and that. And then this, and then we use it like that, and so-and-so borrowed it, now it's going to go into the sanctuary. And of course, you use your dad's tools, and if you stop to think about it, you say, oh, it was in his hands now. He used it like this, and now I'm using it like this. Wow, that's really the interaction, or in the spiritual world, of oneness, where lives together. You know, lives flow together. Well. I want to introduce today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse. This is Roberto Cayo. Cayo is his Dharma name that I gave him. K means blessed or blessing. And Yo, of course, is the sun. So Cayo means blessed sun. Or maybe you could say a blessing sun. I think blessed son, you shine, and because I know that when he was in the LM6 group, their induction ceremony this past May, and during his curriculum time, one time he said that he really always felt blessed, you know, he felt blessed, and so that was an important thing for him. So I said, put it as his Dharma name, he's a blessed son. What does that mean to be blessed? To be able to shine, you know, from a foundation of being blessed. That's a good source of continued teachings, and to be re-inspired and renew oneself. That's a good one. Well, he lives in Florida, and we will now hear from Roberto Cayo.
Hello, everybody. This is Roberto Cayo, and welcome again. Today, I have a story that I'd like to share with you. And the title of the story is called The Grimy Bowl. Now, once a monk came to the Buddha and asked the master, when will I reach nirvana? I'm getting very tired of this world. The Buddha smiled and looked at the monk with kindness and compassion. And he said, let's sit under the tree. And they went and they sat down, and he began to tell the young monk a story. Once there was a trader who lived in the kingdom of Sariva, and he sold fancy goods, pots and pans, and trinkets. And every year he would go from this little town to the big city to peddle his goods. Now there was also another trader in the same town, and they often traveled together for safety. Now this trader was very greedy and was in the habit of always cheating people. When they arrived at the city of Andhapura, they, as was their custom, would split the town into two sections, and each of them would take one part so as to avoid competing with the other. In the big city, there was also a very big mansion, and it was ramshackle. It was all broken down, because apparently here, many years ago, in this mansion, there lived a very rich family, and over the years, they had lost all their money, and most of the family had died, and the only ones that were left alive was a young daughter and the grandmother. They were so poor that they had to hire themselves out to support themselves, and they lived a very, very hard life. Now, it just happened that the greedy trader came upon this house and began to chant outside, beads for sale, pots and pans and trinkets. When the young girl heard the trader, she said, oh, grandmother, please buy me a trinket. Now, we know when we have children and they want something, they can pester us until we get it for them. And, of course, the grandmother, as most grandparents like myself, we're willing to do whatever we can. The grandmother looked at the young granddaughter, and with profound sadness she said, my dear, we have very little, and today we must go to sleep hungry. The young girl remembered that somewhere in the back of the house she had been playing with some old pots and pans. So she ran to the back and began to look through them, and she found an old bowl. She ran back to the grandmother and said, look, we don't need this bowl. Let's please trade it for the trinket. And, of course, the grandmother, being a grandmother, said, okay, let's look at the bowl. And she looked at it, and she turned it around, and it was filthy, and it was grimy. And the grandmother remembered this bowl had been in her family for generations. And she remembered that nobody ever used it. They always threw it around, and they considered it a piece of junk. So the old woman called the trader to come in and have a seat. Sir, she began, my granddaughter would like a trinket. Would you consider a trade? The trader took the bowl, and he pulled a small nail out of his pocket, and he turned the bowl upside down and ran the nail along the edge. And lo and behold, what did he see? It was made out of solid gold. The greedy trader frowned at them and told them, this is a piece of junk. How dare you waste my time making me come in here? And he took the bowl and he threw it on the floor and stomped his way out. The young girl looked at the grandmother and said, what happened? And the grandmother said, well, there are people just like that everywhere. They're just nasty. And the both of them sat down, and they looked at the ground, and they sat in silence. Then suddenly, they heard another trader calling out, beads and trinkets for sale, pots and pans and whatnots. And once more, the granddaughter looked at the grandmother and said, please, can we try one more time? And sure enough, the grandmother called the trader in and made him the same offer. But this time, the trader, when he turned the bowl around, he saw what was in his hands. And he recognized what it was, and he said, Mataji. Now, in India, Mataji means little mother, or my mother. He said to her, Mataji, this bowl is worth 100,000 pieces of silver. The grandmother and the granddaughter looked at each other in complete amazement. But, sir, she said, a trader was just here and told us that this was a piece of junk. "Well," said the trader, "this other person that came in here is a liar. This piece is a very sought-after piece." And the grandmother said, "Maybe it's your own goodness which turned this bowl into gold. Would you please buy it from us?" "Mataji," said the trader, "I don't have the money to buy this bowl." The old woman looked at the trader and said, "Please, sir, give us what you can, and we'll be happy with whatever you give us." "Well," said the trader, "all I have are my goods, which are worth about 1,000 pieces of silver, and whatever I've sold today, which is another 1,000 pieces of silver. Will you take that for the bowl?" "Why, of course," said the old woman. And so the trader got the bowl, and the women got the goods and the coins. And the trader, as he walked out, took off his turban, and he had saved 8 gold pieces in his turban for the trip back. And so he hurried to the river, and he called the ferryman and gave the pieces of silver to the ferryman and said, "Take me back to my town by the shortest route you know how." And off they went. Now, back at the house, who should come by but the greedy trader? And he said, "You know, I'm sorry, madam. My heart was moved to pity by your situation. I will give you 3 copper pieces for that slimy, horrible bowl." The grandmother got up and said, "How dare you, you scoundrel?" And the greedy trader said, "Why are you calling me that?" And she said, "Another trader was just here, and he told me that was solid gold. And so we made a trade, and it's too late. I've already sold it." Well, with that, the greedy trader's face changed color, and an intense pain came over him, and he began to shout, "I've been robbed! I've been robbed! He robbed me!" And he ran right out, and he ran all the way to the river. By the time he got there and began to shout, "Come back, thief! Come back, thief!" no one could hear him because they were already way too far out on the river. And the hate and feelings of despair was so much for the trader that first his face began to swell, and then he turned red, and then blood began to gush out of his mouth, and he fell dead on the shore. Of course, the honest trader went back home and lived a life of charity and kindness and always helped the poor. And when his time was up on this world, he became the bodhisattva of charity and honesty. The two women, with the goods and the silver pieces, began to sell and trade for things until, in time, they renewed their family fortune and it was restored to them. And when the Buddha came into the world, they gave land and food to all the monks who came to visit. This story comes to us from the Jataka tales. And, of course, I rewrote a little bit of it to add a little bit more flavor to it. But in its essence, it's exactly the way it's told. And this story points out to us that no matter what happens in our life, we should persevere and not give up. That life can be very difficult at times, you know, don't last forever. They're impermanent, and all things change. The one who is now rich, poor later on. And even when we ourselves cannot see it due to our own delusions, keep your core precepts. These precepts allowed us to live in prosperity and with good things in our life, even when we suffer from a momentary lack. We should still keep that goodness and help others with our honesty and right actions. Many of us think we deserve the world and all the glory and honor and riches and wealth. And when that does not happen, we curse those who have things. Or, you know, even myself, every once in a while, I become despondent and say, "Oh, I wish that lotto ticket would just fall in my lap so I too can join the ranks of the well-off." You know, and as I think about it, I realize that this whole world is burning in the fire of greed, in the fire of clinging, in the fire of grasping to the detriment of the poor and the needy. Look at your mind. Are you the greedy trader or the honest trader? Will we cheat and lie our way up to the top, or will we watch the opportunity to sail away with a treasure, or will we die on the shore in this place full of hate for the ones who found the hidden treasure and gave what they had for it and kept their hearts pure and simple? Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Oh, you know, during the two-year program in the LM6 group, Roberto always had a lot of good stories. He was full of so many stories. Everybody, the whole class, we always enjoyed the stories. And parables and teaching stories, they're wonderful. You know, way to share the teachings, really. And in the story itself, the teaching, I couldn't help but also be reminded of a particular, I guess you could call it a teaching, that I had shared with the class. And this was a teaching that I received from a Hindu lady who was at an interfaith retreat. She was representing that she was a Hindu teacher, and she said, you know, when we assess or look at or judge or make value judgments about an event, anything, you always have to consider person, place, and time. And I really took that to heart. And that is a great teaching, because sometimes you say, hey, this is the way it is. Oh, this is, well, wait a minute. The right understanding means that you have a little wider perspective of things. Not just right in that moment when it's probably being driven by your baser emotions and desires. And you might make a mistake or a wrong decision or do something that's not really in accordance with the reality of things, where they do depend upon person, place, and time. I say TPT. Of course it depends upon the person. See? The meaning of something, the significance of something depends upon the person, of course. And it depends upon the place, not just the person, but the place. Because if it's a simple example would be a certain kind of behavior is appropriate when you're just with your friends and not at a formal dinner with a lot of, big shots around. Time. Just strictly, some societal value was like this 100 years ago. But now, it's completely opposite, perhaps, in terms of that cultural moire or whatever, you know? Of course, it depends upon. So that this is the big thing. Context is everything. And context means, person, place, and time. This is what we might call, right understanding, the first of the Eightfold Noble Path. It's also part of what is in the teaching, the Japanese word takkan, T-A-K-K-A-N, takkan, which means, translated as wide perspective, a philosophical perspective. And that's part of a wisdom, is being able to, have a perspective of, hey, life's too short for be bothered by this, or don't sweat the small stuff, or, have a wider perspective. And said that, takkan is the gateway to satori. And part of takkan means, you have to take into consideration PPT, person, place, and time. And the reason I'm remembering this is that, you know, Roberto, he really was taken with that person, place, and time teaching. And part of our procedure in our class is we always try to look for nuggets in our readings and find the nugget. And one time Roberto said, well, he really liked it. It really helps him, this PPT, person, place, and time. This is more than a nugget. This is my gold bar. That's what he said. So, yeah, a gold bar. That's a nice gold bowl, if you will. A nice, valuable thing for spiritual tool for one's spiritual growth and journey. Thank you very much. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going. You have a very beautiful day. Thank you.